Thank you for listening to the Covert Nerd Podcast. I really appreciate the time that you give me. Before we start the episode, real quick, I just want to thank a few people that have interacted with me online. I'm not going to be able to get to everybody, but I figure I want to thank a few people at each episode. So Joe at the Drinking at Bible Study Podcast, thanks for listening. Also, Doug Harder, thanks for listening. I appreciate the comments and talking to you in person. And last but not least, Carl at the Goat Kicker Podcast. Really good podcast. You should check it out. He's a really smart guy. So without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up with Tim. We have a treat for you today. We have the man, the myth, the legend, Tim from Rainbow Comics, and he's been on before, and I think it's a running joke, running gag, I guess. Hayden Christian can still come in anytime.
Anytime. He's got a always, statue for he's him. Always welcome. Statue, whatever he wants. Like, I don't care. he's always welcome.
Well, anyway, we did a Star Wars episode, and that's what came up. We were talking about, I think, Star Wars sequels, which...
The prequels.
Prequels, sorry, not sequels, which the new Star Wars movie's coming, but...
Oh, is it? I was completely unaware.
And the... Tim put out an invitation for Hayden to come by anytime, pick up a statue. So I want to make sure we keep reminding Hayden, if you're listening, it's okay. Come on in.
Yeah, absolutely. safe space. We love the prequels here.
Exactly. But today we're talking about X-Men. And if you haven't known yet, there's a new Hickman series running, or whatever you want to call it, that just got done. And I'll let Tim tell about it just a little bit. So it's House of X.
Well, actually, those are done.
Yeah, those are done.
Those are done. So basically, the way I've been telling people is about every decade, every 10 years or so, X-Men kind of needs a booster shot. And that really came into prominence with going way back to like Giant Size X-Men number one, when Chris Claremont came in and introduced a brand new team and kind of retired the old guard. And ever since then... it hasn't been always quite as regular, but every now and then X-Men needs a booster shot. One of the most noteworthy being when Grant Morrison did New X-Men. Following that, we had Jason Aaron doing like Wolverine in the X-Men. A little bit more recent would have been when Bendis came in and redefined everything. And the cool stuff with X-Men is it starts off really interesting, but then it kind of loses its steam. And that's kind of what we saw here within the last couple of years is X-Men story that Bendis introduced 5-6 years ago had run its course, and they weren't quite sure what to do with the X-Men. It was floundering a little bit. And so Jonathan Hickman, who had recently redefined the Avengers, was hired to kind of give a booster shot to the X-Men. And he did that with 2 6-issue miniseries that were released in a weekly manner. So over the course of 12 weeks, we got 2 6-issue miniseries called House of X and Powers of 10. And it was written Powers of X, but it's supposedly Powers of Roman numeral 10.
Yes, Roman numeral 10. Yeah, it was a really good run. And just to kind of give a history on where I got started in X-Men, and then I'll let you tell, you know, kind of your first experience with X-Men. Mine is way back in 1991. With Jim Lee doing the new X-Men number one, and they did a whole Magneto big fancy cover. It was very 90s, but that's where I got started, and I really loved X-Men and read them till about 94-ish or so, and 95 really didn't follow it much. But I thought jumping back into this new storyline, I would have a lot of trouble, but it really wasn't that hard, and I think somebody coming in new shouldn't have a problem at all.
No, not coming at all. The interesting thing with both House and Powers was that, and that's probably what I will be referring to them as, is just House and Powers. But the interesting thing with that is it doesn't disregard what had come before, but there was nothing to set it up. So if you'd been reading X-Men, like let's say you've read every issue of X-Men ever, you still weren't prepared for this story. Yeah. So if you had not read X-Men or had never read X-Men but were vaguely aware of the concept, you were on equal footing with people who had been reading for decades. Yeah. It was very, very smart.
I just thought it was kind of interesting. I got back into X-Men. So X-Men in 1991 had been around 28 years, And I got back into X-Men this year, 28 years after getting in the first time.
So you got you have a nice rhythm going for when you're reading X-Men. Hopefully they'll keep your interest a little bit longer. You won't have to wait another 28 years.
Exactly. And I should preface, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't read the Hickman run, or we'll dive into some of the number ones, just give you a forewarning.
I would even say, like, embrace the spoilers, because at this point, House and Powers are so incredibly dense that even if you have read them, it might help to hear somebody talk about it. And also, if you don't want to read them, it's not at all necessary. Like, you could go in, you could come into Rainbow today if you wanted to pick up X-Men number one, of which we have a few. You could read X-Men number one having not read House and Powers. You'd be just fine.
Yeah, because they do, you're right, they do set up, they're on Krakoa. They have the doors. So, yeah, you're right. You could read those and you would probably be fine.
You'd be fine. The X-Men number one does a very good job of not recapping the events of House and Powers, but contextualizing it in a way that makes sense.
Sure.
Which is very hard to do, because we're going to attempt to do that. And I am not Jonathan Hickman.
Well, I like the whole Hickman concept of, he really didn't introduce any new characters. Because you still have...
He did in Powers. Powers of 10, first issue of that takes place in the future. Okay. And there is... he introduced a new concept of legacy characters.
Okay, yes.
With
Nimrod was a big one.
And... Well, Nimrod's not a creation of Hickman's, but...
Well, I just mean in the whole X universe.
Yeah,
he really
exactly.
didn't bring a lot of new... characters necessarily. He reused
a lot of those characters, and then the idea of, like, Rasputin, who is a descendant of Ilyana, still having the Limbo sword. There was a Nightcrawler descendant who looked more like Azazel, who was his dad, who was red, but didn't have the personality traits of either of them, which is really cool. So he very much was. From the get-go, he was playing with the idea of legacy and what it means to be a mutant, and it was super cool.
I just like the concept that he took, instead of mutants, bad mutants over here versus good mutants over here, and the humans kind of interact sometimes. Now it's pretty much the mutants are all on Krakoa, on the island, and it's pretty much mutants against humans is the basic premise. But... as we'll see, and we'll dive into some of it, there might be some maneuvering going
on. There's not a cookie cutter. It's very realistic in as much as there's not necessarily heroes and villains. It's people with different points of view. He did something very similar in his Avengers, New Avengers run, where in the very first arc of his Avengers, he introduced the villains. And then by the end of that run, those villains were actually Avengers themselves. There's some very similar Hickman-esque themes that have pervaded through not only his Avengers run, but his old Fantastic Four run, and even a lot of his indie comics. So, like, in House and Powers, and even the more recent X-Men books that have come out of House and Powers, there are little interstitial pages that are like white pages with walls of text and graphics that kind of inform the greater world in a way where, like, two characters speaking couldn't get that information across.
Yeah. Some people didn't like that. I was reading online. They didn't like those little...
There's people who didn't like those, and there are people who didn't read those and didn't understand the context. So what Hickman's brought to the table, in essence, is a high-concept sci-fi that actually asks the reader to invest their time and effort and thought. And put a pin in that, because I want to revisit that when we get to Marauders, because that there's something that I think specifically going off of that point has made Marauders my favorite of the new X-Men books. So I definitely want to come back around to that. So talking about House and Powers specifically, as X-Men fans, as comic book fans, we weren't sure what Hickman was going to bring to the table. We were aware of what Hickman does again, like I've said before, with Avengers, with East of West, with his indie stuff. So there's a certain tone that he brings to it that doesn't really mesh with the X-Men. It's a lot like when you find out Bendis is going to DC and he's going to be writing Superman. You're like, okay. So it was really interesting. And House of X number one came out and it was amazing and weird and didn't really know what to do with it. And then Powers of 10 number one came out and we were like, okay, well, we understand House of X. So Powers of 10 is just going to pick up from nope. Powers of 10 was telling an entirely different story. I'm kind of rushing through these to get to my point. House of X number two is one of the greatest comic books I've ever read in my entire life.
Ooh, that's saying a lot.
It really is. I've read a lot of comics. And the deal with House of X number two is we get to know a little bit more about Moira. Moira MacTaggert, for old school X-Men fans, are going to know that she's had an off and on relationship with Charles. She's always been like a support system for him, but she's always been seen as like a human scientist or whatever. Yep. The big revelation that carries through both House and Powers and sets up for the future of the X-Men is we find out that Moira MacTaggert, Moira X is what she's kind of known as under the Hickman regime, is, for lack of a better term, immortal. And I'm using that term very loosely because that's not exactly what it is. They've also said that she reincarnates, which again is not exactly correct. So what we find out in the course of just House of X number two is that Moira MacTaggert, when she dies, she is reborn as Moira again. She lives her entire life again, but she keeps full recollection of her previous life. So when she dies of old age, she then wakes up as a more or less a fetus in her mother's womb, but she has full recollection. When she's born, she remembers being an adult. She remembers her previous life completely. She doesn't have the physical capabilities to like walk or speak or whatever, but she has full recollection of that. And it's incredibly interesting. And so throughout the course of House of X number two, we see how she lives her different lives and how those experiences inform her motivations moving forward. And we find out, this is all in House of X number two, we also find out that Destiny, who's a character that has very close ties to Mystique and can see the future and understands the multiverse and multiple timelines and everything on a level outside of everybody else in the Marvel Universe, Destiny tells Moira she can only do that a maximum of 10, maybe 11 times. In the back of House of X number two, there's a very interesting graph that shows all of the many lives of Moira X. And we see the only timeline where she married a MacTaggert. So we all know her as Moira MacTaggert. There's only one timeline where she did that, and that was the most recent one, which is her 10th life, which is very interesting. We don't have any information about her 6th life yet, but as of the end of House of X number two, which completely redefines everything we know about the X-Men and the relationship of Xavier and Moira and everything has just been completely recontextualized. I keep repeating myself and I apologize, but it's blown my mind and trying to piece it together even after the fact when I have all of the pieces from House of X and Powers of 10, I can't even express how huge of a revelation House of X number two was.
Yeah, he really explained kind of where they're going, but he definitely made it so that you can write a lot of different stories now that all the mutants are on one island, kind of air quotes, working together.
For sure.
And how they can create a bunch of different stories out of that.
The interesting thing I took from just specifically that is not only what does it mean for the future, but what does it mean for the past? And I have really gone into looking at Moira MacTaggert as a completely different character now. So going through and seeing her, understanding her as more of a passive player in this world, to recontextualizing what she did as a proactive person and why she's subtly, instead of her just reacting, you're realizing that the choices she's made has pushed Xavier or Cyclops or Magneto or Apocalypse or whomever into subtle directions. Like, she's playing like fourth dimensional chess.
She is.
And it's just amazing.
Because all these different, if you haven't read it yet, all these different lives of Myra ends up with the mutants basically not winning. And so she's trying to figure out a way that basically destroyed, I guess.
It's not even a matter of winning or losing. It's literally a matter of life and death.
And so now they're all on an island with Xavier and, well, let me look here. We've got the four different houses. And see, this is in that ancillary information that I don't know why some people don't really like. I kind of dig it.
They don't like it because there's no pictures.
Okay, well. So they've got four different houses, so to speak. So you've got Autumn, which is Professor Xavier, Magneto, and Apocalypse. Then you've got Winter, which is Mr. Sinister, Exodus, and Mystique. Spring, which is Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost, and the Red King. But I don't think they've revealed who that
is. We'll
go ahead and spoil it if you can.
We'll get. I want to go into Marauders here
in
a minute.
Okay, all right. I might have missed that. Then Summer is Storm, Jean Grey, Nightcrawler. And then Krakoa, the island itself, Cypher, which who can interpret for Krakoa. But the fun thing is on the ancillary stuff is you have the new language, which is kind of fun. And I have a funny thing later on that they talk about. But so this whole 12-issue run rebooted, so to speak, the X universe or the Marvel universe, for lack of a better word. And now we've got all these new number ones. Let's talk about, let's just start with New Mutants.
Okay.
So they rebooted New Mutants, and New Mutants is Karma, Wolfsbane, Mondo, Cypher, Mirage, Sunspot, Magic, and Chamber are all on that team.
Yeah, here's what's interesting with New Mutants is New Mutants, it's a reunion book of sorts from the older New Mutants title. It's introduced a couple new characters like Mondo, who we don't know too much about. Basically, through the course of House and Powers, we have gateways for Krakoa. Krakoa, again, for people who don't remember, was the island in Giant Size X-Men number one, which we found out going into Jason Aaron's Wolverine and the X-Men served as the grounds for the Jean Grey school and the X-Mansion. It's grown, basically, into being this massive island.
Sure.
So there are portals that are planted in seeds, and where these portals exist, mutants can walk through, take them directly to Krakoa, and one of those seeds was planted on the Starjammer. So New Mutants essentially is going to be taking place in space, we think. At least half of it. New Mutants is an interesting book because it's co-written by Jonathan Hickman and Ed Brisson. And they co-wrote the first issue, and then issue two is written by Ed, issue three is written by Hickman, issue four is written by Ed.
Alternate.
Yes.
Okay.
And what we're not sure yet is if all of those stories are going to, like, by the time this comes out, we'll know.
Yeah.
But I'm speaking right now, issue two isn't out yet. It'll be out next week. We're recording this on a Friday. I'll be able to read it on Monday, so I'll probably eat my words. But we don't know if Ed and Jonathan are going to be tackling the same story or if they're going to be telling two different stories within the same title. But as of right now, as of New Mutants number one, all of the characters in New Mutants are off planet.
Yes.
And we're finding out that Cypher leaving Krakoa actually has some negative repercussions because there's nobody to translate for Krakoa. X-Men number two was very interesting because we're seeing a lot of people upset. And they're also really upset over the little thing that happened at the end of X-Force that we'll talk about in just a second. But yeah, New Mutants is carries on a lot of the themes from House and Powers and X-Men. It is, out of the spinoff titles from the X-Men world, I would say New Mutants is the most heavy as far as sci-fi and carrying on the major themes from House and Powers. It's very much, it's not a popcorn book. That goes with your thinking man sci-fi, where if you want to read New Mutants, and absolutely read all of these books, but New Mutants is the book that requires the most from you as a reader.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I really liked it. I read all of these and I had no problem diving in, not knowing a lot of these characters like Starjammers. I never really read much of that. And I knew what was going on.
The best thing about all of these X-Men books is they're all very different. Whereas you had, you know, a million X-Men books in the middle of the 90s, and they were all more or less kind of cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Wolverine was on every team, and they're all kind of trying to achieve the same goal, whereas this is completely separate.
They're different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Then we have Excalibur, which is, let's tell who's on the team. Betsy Braddock, Rogue, Gambit, Jubilee, Apocalypse, Trinary, and Brian Braddock, which was Captain Britain.
Captain Britain. So Excalibur is a book I need more issues of to form a full opinion on.
Yeah.
It's written by Teeny Howard. Art on that is by Marcus Toe. It's a very magic-heavy book, and the whole idea is Brian Braddock, who was Captain Britain, is no longer able to hold that title, and Betsy Braddock, who, oh my gosh, here we go.
Might be difficult to explain.
No, we're doing it.
Okay.
Psylocke, going back to the Hunt for Wolverine from a couple of years ago, she is now back in her original body. She was trapped in the body of an Asian assassin who went by the name Quanon, and we will get back to her very soon. But Betsy Braddock is now kind of searching for her own identity, and she's able to step into the shoes of her brother, and she's becoming the new Captain Britain. And along with that, while she's trying to assume this new mantle, she has fan favorites Rogue and Gambit with her, as well as Jubilee. And for some reason, I'm going to go ahead and call him Apocalypse. He's here. He wants to be called something else that human tongues can't actually pronounce.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that. We talked about the language, and I thought it was funny. He was always... They would say, hey, Apocalypse, or I need to talk to Apocalypse, and he would correct them. It was like, no, my name is...
Yeah,
it's a new language.
It's a new language. It's basically an apocalypse symbol in Krakoan, which we don't have the capacity to actually speak. But Excalibur is a long haul book where I can't really pitch it because it hasn't really started.
It's very early, and it's very magic heavy. They go back to Arthurian.
The villain of the book appears to be Morgan Le Fay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that'll be really interesting. It's a hard sell book for me to elevator pitch it because I don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
Come back and talk to me in 6 months and we'll see where the state of things is with Excalibur.
Cool. Well, here's your favorite, Marauders.
Marauders is my heavy favorite.
Here's the team. So you got Kitty Pryde, Lockheed, Storm, Nightcrawler, Iceman, Wolverine, Emma Frost, Bishop, and Pyro.
Pyro, and it's the original Pyro. One of the cool things with House and Powers is it's reestablished the fact that mutants can be resurrected.
Yeah.
And we will get to it. We're going to get to it. Death doesn't feel as permanent or didn't feel as permanent with the end of House and Powers. So everybody who's ever been dead, their brain patterns were cataloged in Cerebro, and they were able to, Professor X was able to pull those out of the ether and put them into little pods. And so now there's like new clone bodies with the full beings of people who had recently passed on. So this version of Pyro is the original Pyro. But I don't care about that. We're talking about Marauders. So what I was saying before about the high concept sci-fi in House and Powers is directly addressed in the first page of Marauders number one, where Storm and Nightcrawler are explaining to Kitty Pryde, and I'm specifically saying Kitty Pryde, they're explaining to Kitty Pryde what these new portals are that take mutants wherever they want to go. Kitty's like, all right, well, I'll see you on the island. You turn the page, she's walking through the portal, and it doesn't work. She walks in full force, breaks her nose.
Yep.
essentially what this book is saying is we are taking like these high concept sci-fi things that people had a problem with exist in this world, and we're not worried about that. Marauders is essentially Kitty Pryde as a punk rock pirate princess, is more or less, that's how I've been pitching it. It is so much fun. It is, and she's decided too that she no longer wants to be called Kitty. She's an adult. She wants to be called Kate. Kate Pryde, which sounds very strange, and I'm going to slip throughout this entire thing and call her Kitty a whole bunch. It's very much about Kate Pryde trying to define who she is as an adult. And she's one of those few comic book characters who gets a chance to grow up, and her growing up completely defines how we view her character. So Kate Pryde can't get to the island any other way. She has to commandeer a ship and actually sail to the island. And she realizes that she kind of likes doing that. She takes it on herself then to build a crew. And she goes on TV and publicly states that calling themselves the Marauders, and their mission is to find people who can't get to the portals, and they will take mutants to Krakoa. Because Krakoa, as it exists now, officially, if you're a mutant at all, you're officially a citizen of Krakoa, and you have full reign to live there.
Yeah. And not every mutant can get to a portal, or as we see, some countries are blocking the portals.
Yeah,
mutants can't get there.
They're very much hoarding the portals and are being very very selective on who can and can't go through it. Yeah. In Marauders number 2, they officially get their own ship, and it's called the Marauder. And we also find out that Kitty Pryde is officially the Red Queen, which Black Tom Cassidy does not enjoy.
Not happy about.
He's not happy at all, because he was grooming. Emma Frost had some interesting terms for who he was grooming. But let's just say he had his sights set on some very specific ladies with very specific tendencies to be the Red Queen. And Emma Frost was like, nope, too late. We already have one.
Yeah.
But in the going back to House and Powers, it was specifically a Red King, and Emma Frost has usurped that. So now Kate Pryde is the Red Queen, who sits on one of the council chairs for mutants on Krakoa, but she ironically is the only mutant who can't use those portals, and she's running basically a pirate business for the Hellfire Club.
Yeah.
And it is so incredibly bananas bonkers, and it's so much fun. Yeah. It is out of all of the X books, it's the one that has the most fun with the concept while eschewing everything that's super high concept or makes you think. Not that this is a dumb book,
no,
but this is a book that is that popcorn experience where you can just sit down, read Marauders, and have a good time.
Yeah.
They were hiding out in a tattoo parlor in issue 2, and the guy's like, this isn't just like a lounge. You have to get a tattoo. Pyro gets a skull tattooed on his face. And then Kitty Pryde gets tattoos on her knuckles that say hold on the right fist and fast on the left fist.
Nice.
So it says hold fast.
Are you going to get hold fast tattoos on your?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not. But I absolutely am in love with it. And Nightcrawler has been criminally underused, but I think that's going to change here in the future. Pyro is the wild card. He's so much fun to read. Bishop is going to be involved, but we don't really know to what capacity. And it's kind of interesting to have, go ahead and reference my Transformers podcast that I was on earlier, but he's kind of an Ultra Magnus,
okay,
where he's very much by the book, a very, you know, he's the cop.
Yeah.
And he's going to be on this ship of pirates, and I'm really looking forward to that dichotomy. Storm, I just love Storm. Give me more Storm. Like, Storm could be in every book, and I'd be fine with it. But yeah, Marauders, I'm probably talking about this book more than any others because it is my heavy favorite.
Yeah.
It's written by Jerry Duggan. The art in it, I cannot remember the artist offhand. I know Russell Dodderman does the covers.
Matt O'Lally?
Oh yeah, Lally is the artist on that. I really, really enjoy their artwork as well. But Russell Dodderman on covers, man, this is the most gorgeous stuff.
It's just a fun concept,
I think. It's so much fun.
It's a fun one. So on to the next one, X-Men number 1.
X-Men
is Cyclops, Storm. So she's on both of these.
Well, actually, I'm going to pause you right there. Because I believe from what I've seen with X-Men and X-Men number one and X-Men number two, this seems to be a catch-all book. It's the primary focus of X-Men is going to be the Summers family. So Cyclops, Phoenix, Rachel Gray, Cable, Cyclops' dad is on the cover.
Yeah, Corsair, yeah.
His other, Havoc, his other brother, Vulcan, they're on the covers. But I really feel like from what I'm seeing, this book is going to be showcasing, oh, and Wolverine, of course. Mm. But this book seems to be the book to go to when you want to know what's going on with Cyclops or Storm or Wolverine. This is the main flagship title.
Kind of your core characters. Mm-hmm. Because they've also got Polaris, Magneto, Dr. Reyes, Jean Grey, like you said, Havoc, Vulcan, Wolverine, Cable, Prestige, and Corsair.
Yeah, everybody, kind of a, everybody's on there. But it very much is, this is the Cyclops, Wolverine, Jean Grey book. Mm-hmm. This is the core, you know who the X-Men are. This is the book they're in.
Yeah.
And this is directly picking up from House and Powers. While conceptually that hat goes to New Mutants, thematically and plot-wise, X-Men kind of carries that torch. We're understanding the layout of Krakoa and how the politics are set up. We've got the House of X. We've got the House of M. Sinister's We have Bar Sinister on the other side of the island. And then with issue two, there's an interesting thing that happens where Krakoa starts mating with another island that has another life form that exists on that island. And so now we have an entire new species that's going to be intermingling with the mutants. And it's very strange. There is a very sexual tone to X-Men in as much as like, not like in an adult or racy way, but in a genetics
biological way
to like, we literally have to keep our numbers up, and the way by doing that is through procreation.
Yes.
And procreation is a very heavy, I want to say subtext for right now, because it's not the main point of the book, but it kind of is the main thing nobody's talking
about. Well, remember the three laws in Krakoa: mm-hmm. respect the land, kill no man, make more mutants.
And basically, X-Men is the book that carries all three of those tenets. Mm-hmm. And again, I think Hickman is being very smart by showing that aspect. And again, I'm trying to catch my words very carefully. I'm trying to be very respectful of the listener base.
Sure.
But Hickman has been very judicial in showcasing the harmony that's required to further the mutant race.
Yes. And there's, I think, X-Men, like you said, that's where they're going to showcase a lot of the power players. I think you're going to be focusing more on Magneto, Apocalypse, Sinister, more maybe in that book.
Let's talk about X-Force, and then I'll circle back to X-Men.
Okay.
Because, let's talk about X-Force.
Let's hit X-Force. I don't think I have the team. Who's on? Let's see. We got Jean Grey, Domino, Beast, Wolverine, Black Tom on X-Force, I think.
Yeah, X-Force is going to be your PG-13 action movie. And the whole idea with X-Force, they're the proactive team who's trying to solve different mysteries, more or less. And it is written by Ben Percy, who I know from DC for doing like Green Arrow.
Okay.
He worked on some of the Age of X-Men stuff before House and Powers, and I really like his stuff. But the real star of the show is Joshua Cassara's art.
Oh.
It very much is, it reminds me of Esad Rebic's art a little bit, who worked with Jonathan Hickman during his Avengers run. It's very frantic and kinetic, with a lot of really deep blues and purples in the colors.
Okay.
And it's really, really cool. X-Force number one ends with a very shocking revelation that Xavier got killed.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go back to what we were saying before, mutants can be resurrected, but the catalyst for doing that is Xavier.
Yes.
So if Xavier's not there, suddenly...
Who's going to implant the memories?
Exactly. And so I was reading X-Force number one, and I read the end, and Xavier was dead, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, but I contextualized it within the idea of X-Force, as in, like, X-Force is a self-contained book. I'm sure he was killed or whatever, but we'll, you know, that'll only exist in this book. I realized pretty quickly Xavier dying in X-Force number one is already talked about in Fallen Angels number one.
Yep.
He's dead.
Yeah.
And so in X-Men, is it? No, it wasn't X-Men number two. Excuse me. I misspoke earlier. It was in Fallen Angels, which we'll get to here really soon. Magneto's in mourning over the loss of Xavier.
Yes.
And it is very, very heavy. X-Force number one allows us to look at all of these X books as a singular entity, which I did not come into any of this expecting. I was expecting Fallen Angels will be kind of a fun X-Men book. Marauders will be kind of a fun X-Men book. X-Force will be traditionally what X-Force is, where it's the action book. X-Men will be the flagship title. Excalibur will be whatever it is Excalibur is going to be. And I'm right. All of those things are true. But what happens in one book directly affects what happens in another book. And it is, microcosmically speaking, it is the epitome of what a comic book continuity can be.
Yeah.
And it's very, very exciting.
No, it's fun. Yeah. I like how you're right. In the next one, which is just his go-to, is Fallen Angels, which is Psylocke. And you kind of touched on that earlier. Magneto, Mr. Sinister, Cable, X-23, and then Captain Britain.
And that's the cast from issue one.
Yeah.
Fallen Angels itself is basically Psylocke, X-23, and Cable. This version of Psylocke is actually Quanon, who was the body that Betsy Braddock took over in the 90s. So when you think of Psylocke, like that Asian assassin, mm-hmm. it is this version. This is that body.
Yeah.
So this personality is retaking that body. And she's a little pissed. And she said, Psylocke took my body. I'm taking her name. So Betsy Braddock is now Captain Britain. Quanon is Psylocke. And then we also have X-23 and Cable. And Cable, oh my gosh, you guys, the X-Men is so, so whatever. Please leave all of this in. This is real. Cable is not who you think of when you think of Cable. The old man Cable got assassinated by young man Cable, and everybody's okay with it. This is young man Cable. I honestly haven't read the X-Force series that led into House and Powers. And that was an X-Force book that had like Domino and, well, she's in the new book too, but this, it had like Domino and all of the other X-Force people you would think of being led by this young Cable. So I really don't know too much about this guy. But the covers on this are done by Ashley Witter, and I've got some of her stuff. The book's written by Brian Edward Hill, mm-hmm. With art by Simon Kredansky. And this book is the book that I am the most intrigued about for the long term, because it very much feels like a revenge story.
Yes.
And I'm not sure what the legs on that would be.
Yeah, I agree. This one and Excalibur, I think, you have to be in for the long haul.
Yeah, you have to strap in. Fallen Angels, this first arc in Fallen Angels is very much about Psylocke trying to figure out who she is and what she wants to do. And it's very cool that she's taking Cable and X-23 along with her, because those are two characters who have very similar stories.
Yeah. And this one I found alludes to, now the whole concept is that Krakoa is kind of a utopia for mutants, and they've done this before. They had Utopia and then Genosha for mutants, but the concept is that everybody kind of gets along, but you see here some interaction between Sinister and Apocalypse. I think it's this one where he talks about, Magneto mm-hmm. and Sinister. He says, I use Magneto's ego to get what I want. And he kind of talks about, so I wonder if it's starting to allude to, we might see some, and then this whole team is actually off the books, so to speak.
Oh, for sure. And well, Magneto tells Psylocke, he says, I can't authorize you to do what you want, and I can't tell you to go see Sinister, but you should go see Sinister. And again, this is a Magneto who's in mourning over losing Xavier, and this is a Magneto who is very excited about finally achieving his goals in a nonviolent capacity.
Yes.
And suddenly that figurehead is gone. The whole leadership structure of the X-Men is incredibly exciting.
Yes. Well, now he you see this in Power and House a lot, the Messiah complex that Magneto kind of has, and it feeds into that. Xavier even said this is he's getting what he wants. And I think your predictions, I guess, what do you foresee? Apocalypse or Magneto trying to, since Xavier is gone for now anyway, maybe causing a power vacuum?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's too early probably, but
Apocalypse
anyway.
has stated in Excalibur that he's not that interested in leading. He's more interested in the concept of power and survival, but not necessarily being in charge of the mutants. I think that would be beneath him at this point. Magneto, while he has been a leader in the past, this is not the conditions under which he wanted to lead. And he was very much to the point where he was like, I'm behind Charles, we're Charles Xavier, we're together in this. I'm going to support him and kind of do my thing. And I genuinely think there's a full shakeup that's occurring right now, because Cyclops shouldn't be in charge. Jean shouldn't be in charge. Wolverine shouldn't be in charge. Magneto shouldn't be in charge. I'm almost wondering if that's the point, whether or not it could be a move by the Winter House, was it? It could be Black Tom and Emma working to overthrow Xavier.
Okay. Yeah, Winter is Sinister, Exodus, and Mystique.
Okay, yeah, no, I was wrong.
And Spring is Shaw or Black, the Shaw. That's it. Emma Frost.
That's it. So it could be the Spring House, but also I hadn't counted on Mystique either.
Wow.
But I definitely see it within Emma's capability to do what's been done. But also sitting at that table is also Kate Pryde.
Oh. Yeah.
Who would not stand for that? There are so many, like, X-Men is my favorite soap opera because it just, you have to take everything at face value, but you can take nothing at face value.
Yeah. Well, I think this whole concept, again, I've tried to get into X-Men again over the years, just couldn't do it. But this one did really capture my attention for whatever reason. I think it's just, they did throw a lot of the stuff, old stuff out. In some ways, this whole concept that they have is really interesting. And that we also do see, though, we were talking about internal strife, but we also see Xavier's assassins. Oh,
don't say strife. I'm not ready.
Conflict or possible conflict.
Oh, man, what if it's all strife? Oh man, it's all going to be Cable's clone.
Oh, geez.
Oh.
But we see the assassins coming in and killing Xavier, so we have some external pressure. And then we also see Director Devo on that space station where they destroyed Master Mold. He's still there, and the space station is still there, and he talks about getting revenge on the mutants.
I completely forgot about that.
So I think they're going to explore some of the human side of it, because there is a lot of angst now that Krakoa is set up, and they said, look, you either acknowledge us as a country, or we're just going to kind of ignore you and we're not going to sell to you because they have the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten into the how Krakoa became its own nation, which is fantastic on its own, but irrelevant at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, the potential, here's the fun thing. The potential for X-Men stories is bigger now than it has been in a long time.
Yes.
And not only is the potential there, but the quality is there as well. We're looking at, these aren't creators that Marvel has put onto X-Men to fill a quota. These are creators who have a vision, and the vision is united under Hickman, who gets final say on everything that's happening in these books.
Okay.
Specifically on his book and on New Mutants that he's co-writing, but he also is, he's not the editor, so they still have an editor, but he's the idea guy. And it's very similar to what DC's doing with Gerard Way in charge of Young Animal. The Sandman universe is overseen by Neil Gaiman. They're not editing, but they're saying, yes, this is within our concise vision for what we want these things to be. It's like Kathleen Kennedy with Star Wars. you know, she says, yes, this now is Star Wars. Or Kevin Feige with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is in conjunction with our vision for the thing. And speaking as somebody who's been a comic book fan for a long time, having that united vision outside of just editorial is really, really exciting, because the editors can do their business to make sure that everything is cohesive and makes sense and is put together correctly. But using a full creative voice in Jonathan Hickman, in this instance for X-Men, really makes sure that what happens in X-Force number one matters to Fallen Angels number one. It doesn't necessarily affect the other books that came out beforehand, because as far as we know, there Xavier's still alive. Now that Xavier's dead in X-Force, Fallen Angels number one is the last number one to come out in a release schedule. Then moving into all these number twos, of which there's been a few now, with Fallen Angels number one, X-Men number two, Marauders number two, it's very clear that Xavier is dead.
Yes.
And that you don't have to have read X-Force for that to happen. Xavier's killed off panel in X-Force number one. Mm-hmm. We don't actually see that action happen, which could play into things in the future. You know, death is whatever in comics. Yeah. That's not my point. But the fact that something very important happened in that book. Also in Fallen Angels, it's alluded to that Betsy Braddock is busy and is now Captain Britain. And that's happening in Excalibur. You don't have to read Excalibur. You get the information you need in Fallen Angels number one. But those books exist in a way where if I'm reading Excalibur, that is directly affecting the story of Fallen Angels.
Sure.
Fallen Angels is also reacting to what happened in X-Force. And X-Men is upset because Cypher is off in space in New Mutants, and then Xavier got killed in X-Force. And it's this very well-sculpted story. At the center of it is Jonathan Hickman conducting this crazy orchestra, and we've barely gotten started.
Yeah, they gave him a big field to play in.
Oh, and he's playing.
And he's playing. And you have your finger on the pulse of the comic industry. Did they have any indication how long Hickman's going to be doing this?
The rumor right now is about 4 years.
Okay.
And then at the end of the 4 years, who knows what'll happen. But I know starting in 2020, we're going to get a Wolverine book. And that Wolverine book will exist this world.
Okay.
And I'm expecting by the beginning of the new year, we'll probably get a few more books as we go. I know Russell Dodderman is doing covers and interior arts on a miniseries written by Hickman that stars Jean Grey and Emma Frost.
Oh.
And that starts in February. I'm really excited about that.
Jean Grey and Emma Frost, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It'll be...
But it's still in this universe.
No, it's still set in this whole thing. Hickman's in it for the long haul, as far as the short term is concerned.
Yeah.
The next 4 years, his name is going to be attached to it. A Hickman story is best read over time. So his Avengers, like he wrote Ultimates, and his Ultimates factored into his Fantastic Four, and his Fantastic Four factored into his Avengers and New Avengers, which factored into his Secret Wars, which kind of put a bow on everything he'd done until then. So we're looking at a decade of stories. And Hickman was essentially just kind of done with superheroes for a while. And to hear that he was coming back to Marvel was amazing. What he's doing with X-Men, it exists in the same universe as his Avengers stories, but it's not picking up on those threads yet.
Yet.
And you talk to me in 2 years, and maybe we'll see how the evil Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe has tapped into the remains of the world that Doom controlled and somehow is factoring
There's a gate there or something like that.
Yeah, who knows how it'll be going forward. But as of right now, it's just a fresh Hickman take. It is a long-haul story. Like you want to come in, you're going to get some really good stuff.
Yeah.
But if you stick with it, by the end of these next 4 years, you're going to have an amazing X-Men epic that I think is going to sit on the shelves next to Grant Morrison's new X-Men or Chris Claremont's redefining of the X-Men. It's super duper fun.
My advice, I guess, would be read The Power and House and then pick up issue one and two of these number ones that we talked about, or these that we talked about, and then figure out you know, which ones you like best and go from there. I mean,
absolutely.
They all have, like we talked about, they all have their pluses and minuses.
Well, and I would even say, to usurp what you just said, if there's any of these books that you think could be interesting, come in and pick it up. Even if you don't start with number one, come in, if you think Marauder sounds cool because you like pirate books, and let's say you come into the store and Marauder's number three is out, maybe we don't have one and two.
Yeah.
Pick up Marauder's number three. Pick up Fallen Angels number two. Who knows? Pick up, if you want to read a comic, you don't have to. There's not a specific rule.
Yeah.
And the cool stuff about Marvel books specifically is there is recap pages that will explain where the world is. If there's any books you want to read, check it out. Pick it up. Flip through it.
And like we said, you wouldn't even have to read House and Power, honestly.
No,
you
not
can
at
pick
all.
These up. And again, like I said, I've been out of X-Men for over 20 years, jumped right in, and like, okay, I know what's going on.
Yeah. If you wanted to start from the beginning, start with House of X number one.
Yeah.
But if you just want to check it out, just come in. If you come into Rainbow, talk to me. We'll get you set up with the best jumping on point, or go into your local shop, talk to whoever runs your store. I'm sure they'll be more than happy to help you out.
And I'm sure Power and House will be out in trade pretty soon.
There's a hardcover coming out in, I want to say, before Christmas.
Okay. That'd be I kind of like that. Just if it's this late in the game, just go get a trade paperback. Get them all in one, and you can just binge.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What's the Marauders is your number one. Let's go through and rank them.
Sure.
What do you think? Number one's Marauders, I know.
Number one is Marauders. I would say number two for me would be X-Men.
Okay.
Fallen Angels.
Number three.
And this is not this
static.
Is, like, we're going off of
based on what you read now.
Very little. So and even like the bottom of my list is still great.
Yeah.
Marauders number one. I would put probably New Mutants on the bottom right now. Right above that would be Excalibur. And then X-Force is right in the middle.
Right in the middle there. Okay.
This is going to be a fluid list. For my personal preferences, Marauders is probably going to hang out on top for a while.
Okay.
And like I said, it's disingenuous to say that New Mutants being my least favorite is not good, because it's fantastic. It's very, very good. Just for my personal sensibilities, it's my least favorite. But that's like saying The Good Dinosaur is the worst Pixar movie, because like the worst Pixar movie is still like a really good movie.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, I agree. Last but not least, right now, who is your favorite X character?
Kate Pride.
Kate Pride. Okay.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah. Like right now. Yeah.
Prior to this, was that still the case?
Prior to this, I got into X-Men because of the 90s cartoon.
Oh, yes.
So you were talking about how you were into the 90s comics.
Mm-hmm.
So Gambit's always held a special place in my heart, and Jubilee is probably my favorite. But story-wise, based on where everything is right now in a post-House and Powers X-Men world, Kate Pride's journey is one that I can kind of relate to. I don't know. Her best friend's a dragon, man. What else do you want?
Yes. And then we do get to see Colossus show up.
Oh, man.
So I don't know if there's going to be something with Kitty Pryde and Colossus again, or what they're going to do.
I hope they kind of stay apart.
Did you like? Oh, okay. So you liked them apart.
Well, no, I'm just kind of tired of it.
Oh, okay. 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 But they, like you said, Hickman has a huge, now that they're all together in this whole concept, they've got a lot of places they can go over the next several years. So it'll be interesting to see. It's cool. Well, like I said, go pick up all of these and let us know what you think. If Tim's wrong, let him know.
Yeah, definitely. Tell me specifically.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I definitely am wrong. Please have a different opinion from me. Don't base all of your opinions on the things that I say. Read the stuff on your own. And if you find a completely different viewpoint from me, actually come into the store, tweet at me, give me a call at the store, tell me how wrong I am.
Yes.
It's totally fine. As long as you do it civilly, I'm into it.
Well, let everybody know, or let the listener know, Tim, how they can get a hold of you then if they have
Well, if you want to, you
good,
can
bad,
always...
or the ugly.
Oh, sure. Well, I run Rainbow Comics here in Lincoln, Nebraska. We're located at 1501 Pine Lake Road, Suite 17. We're right in between a nail salon and a juice stop. So if you can hear things in the background, usually it is the juice stop blenders. You can always give us a call if you want to at 402-975-8332. We'll try to help you out. The best way to get in touch with me or my employee, Taylor, is to find us on Facebook at Rainbow Comics Lincoln. That's going to be where the bulk of our interactions are done outside of the store. Mm-hmm. And usually if you contact us there, we'll get back in touch with you within normal business hours. We do videos once or twice a week, yes, showcasing new books. We recently had Phil Hester in the store doing a signing. I know we have some stuff coming up for Black Friday. Yeah, it's going to be a super fun time, you guys. So come hang out. Come talk to me about X-Men. Come talk to me about not X-Men. I like other stuff.
Yeah. We need to get to Hellboy here pretty soon.
Oh, my gosh.
But I'll have a link in the show notes to all of this. And how can they get a hold of you on Twitter?
On Twitter, my handle is at M-O-T-H-E-E, Mothy, Timothy, without the Tim, but I didn't want people to think Mothy. And let me tell you, let's go into the etymology of my Twitter handle. No. Yeah, at Mothy, M-O-T-H-E-E on Twitter is me.
Definitely. Let him know what you think about the X titles. So.
And also tell Hayden Christensen that I'm still waiting and he's always welcome at my store.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Tim. We'll do it again next time and maybe do some Star Wars or some Hellboy. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. Yep. Thanks a lot, Lee.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed listening to Tim and I talk about X-Men as we enjoyed recording it. Go to covertnerd.net for all the links that we mentioned in the show and all the different ways you can get in touch with me through social media or email. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Until next time, nerd it up.